Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 19th, for the obituary and death notice section. In Pecos, Priscilla Lara Garcia passed away on November 15th in Pecos. Rosary and visitation will be Monday, November 21st at 7 p.m. at Pecos Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 22nd at Santa Rosa de Lima Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Mount Evergreen Cemetery. Arrangements are made by Pecos Funeral Home. Priscilla was born in Big Spring to Donacio and Patra Lara on March 21st, 1948. She is preceded in death by her parents, Donaciano and Petra Lara, her two brothers, Donaciano Lara Jr. and Oscar Lara, and sister Rebecca Prieto. Priscilla is survived by her husband, Octavio Garcia, son Andrew and Marina Rodriguez, daughter Esmeralda Rodriguez, son Oscar and Selena Rodriguez, daughter Bianca and Isaac Avila, Leslie Garcia, Robbie Garcia. She is also survived by her sisters and many grandchildren. The family would like to extend a very special appreciation to everyone for their support and prayers during the time of our loss. In Big Spring, Marie Norman, 96, and formerly of Odessa, passed away on Wednesday, November 2nd. No services are planned. Marie was born July 14, 1926, in Brady, to parents R.H. Evans and Lyra Evans. She married the love of her life, Dick Norman, December 28, 1947, in Corpus Christi. They were married for 54 years. She is survived by daughters Sherry White of Big Spring and Tanita Weisenhunt and her husband Ray of Bedford, a sister Pat Holland, Freyer de Hoven of Houston, and many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you give to your favorite organizations, Home Hospice of Big Spring or Big Spring Senior Citizens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. In Odessa, sadly, our dearest mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Francisca Madrid Lujan, 89, of Odessa, died peacefully at Medical Center Hospital on Tuesday, November 15th, after battling COPD and heart disease. Francisca is survived by her son and daughter-in-law, Rogelio and Lydia Lujan of Carrollton, a daughter, Flora Butler of Waco, brother Andy and wife Juanita Madrid of Odessa, sister Antonio Ramirez of Odessa, numerous nieces, nephews, cousins, and in-laws, and grandchildren. Francisca was preceded in death by her husband, Ricardo Ornelas Lujan, a daughter, Norma Lujan, three sons, Rodriguez Lujan, Richard Lujan Jr., and Caterino Lujan, her parents. A mass of Christian burial will be on Monday, November 21st at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of San Juan Catholic Church at 905 Edgeport Drive in Odessa. Interment to follow at Ector County Cemetery. Visitation will be on Saturday, November 19th from 5 to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home, 1700 North Jackson Avenue, and on Sunday, November 20th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary will be recited on Sunday, November 20th at 7 p.m. in the chapel of Odessa Funeral Home. Novena Rosary to be recited at the residence beginning Monday, November 21st at 6 p.m. through November 29th. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.odessafuneralhome.com for the Lujan family. In Odessa, Christine Chapman, 95, died on Tuesday, November 15th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, November 22nd, Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Pastor Clydell Chapman is officiating. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. In Lubbock, Pauline Jo Van Dyke, 62, died on Thursday, November 17th. Graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. on November 21st, Sunset Memorial Garden. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hi, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American on Sunday, November 20th. MCH pays back $3 million in ARPA funds early. Some council members angered by move, by Kim Smith and Laura Dennis. Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven has drawn the ire of several city council members who say they acted unprofessionally and unethically when he went to the Medical Center Health Systems last week and asked them to repay a $3 million loan given to them during the COVID-19 pandemic. The three-year loan wasn't due for another 22 months. Councilmember Steve Thomas, Tom Sprawls, Dietra White said they were never told Hoven intended to make the request, found the request to be abhorrent and gross case of overstepping Odessa City Manager Michael Morano. They are also upset because they believe Hoven has unilaterally decided to use the money to provide raises for Odessa Fire Rescue personnel, despite the fact that compensation study is still underway for all city employees. They believe Hoven's actions are important of things to come, especially now that three new council members will be sworn in next week to replace a trio of council members that routinely voted against Hoven and Councilmember Mark Mata and Dennis Swanner. Chris Haney, Gilbert Vasquez, and Greg Connell ran unopposed for the seats being vacated by Mari Willis, White, and Sprawls, respectively. Hoven did not respond to the email seeking an interview. Swanner and Mata texted to say they'd agreed to give an exclusive to the online social media outlet and declined to answer additional questions. They applauded Hoven's actions in another news story. I feel it would be unethical of me to give information on this subject to another news source, Mata texts. Moreno and Assistant City Manager Cindy Munchie didn't respond to emails since Saturday. Willis also didn't return a phone call. The hospital requested the funds due to the financial strain the COVID pandemic caused the hospital. The hospital was forced to stop surgeries for months. The city also loaned Odessa Regional Medical Center $1 million, but it's unclear if Hoven asked them to repay it. CEO Stacy Brown hasn't turned a phone call seeking comment. MCH received the funds in September 2021, and under the terms of the contract, the hospital wasn't expected to pay the city back until it reached reimbursement from FEMA, which has not yet happened. Hospital officials say all the paperwork in FEMA has been turned in and they expect a full refund. MCA CEO Russell Tippin confirmed Friday night Hoven emailed him last week seeking the funds back now to give Odessa firefighters raises. Tippin said he immediately asked for a check to be cut to the reimbursement city early instead of waiting for MEMA to reimburse the funds, as was the original agreement. I have no doubt we will get our full reimbursement from FEMA, Tippin said. I would like people to know we appreciate people helping us out and we're glad to get it paid back. I'm trying to be good partners. We do our best to oblige and we're glad to pay it back early. The city helped us out when we needed it and we're better financial spot than we were, Tippin said. MCH also sought help from Ector County, but it was turned down. The ARPA funds essentially had been provision of the funds that were used to certain type of health care needs during the pandemic. FEMA would reimburse hospital dollars for dollar, essentially doubling the ARPA funding, overstepping. Sprawls, White, and Thompson each said they think the loan repayment should have been discussed by the city council, and if they had agreed to make the ask, City Manager Michael Moreno or City Attorney Natasha Brooks should have represented the city. Thompson said Moreno was unable to request until he received an email from Hoven asking the city had received the check. The mayor is now running the city, not the city manager. This is not how our city government is set up. It's a complete breach, Thompson said. The headlines need to be the city mayor wants the city manager's job. The city and MCH have a great relationship, and White fears Hoven's action may have damaged it. When we allocated that money, we knew the plans were. We were willing to wait and see if they could recoup any of that money. It was voted upon. It was agreed upon, and so it was disturbing to hear that it's gone and wasn't that money wants it back now, White said. If the shoe were on the other foot, and it was the hospital asking the city for money, White said she had been left with a bitter taste in her mouth. Thompson expressed similar thoughts. Do you know the problem with this? Thompson said. We make a deal. We're West Texans. Our word is our bond. Besides that, it's a sister municipality that's working very closely with us, especially during the pandemic. Since he's a lame duck, Sprawl said he's not surprised Hovind didn't tell him about his intentions. Still, he was not pleased. I think it's less than professional, he said. I think what the mayor did is unethical. And if he didn't tell anybody what he was doing, Sprawl said, that didn't tell the council I was aware of it. Rumors have been running rampant, and the new council plans to move to Fire Romano, and Hovind's actions have been exacerbated those fears, White, Thompson, and Sprawl said. The worst-case scenario is that our loss, our city manager, council forms a government. We hire trained, experienced, and effective people to be our city administration. These are not folks that are just appointed. They are not people, and I don't mean to make it sound light, but they are not just people who get enough votes, White said. These people are crucial to the city and their success, White said. I don't want any group, no matter what is coming in, and feeling they have far better equipped to run our multimillion-dollar entity such as City of Odessa, White said. White said she's asking for everyone to pray for the city council members to make good decisions. Rawl said the city council shall act like a board of directors that hires managers to let them manage things. Well, our dysfunctional city council has not done that in the last 2 years, Sprawl said. There's too much overreach and it's very sad. He fears what has happened over the next 2 years. I don't know whether they have ulterior motives or if they just have large egos, but it's going to be difficult to slow them down. Ultimately, the public can make a difference, but it's going to take some noisy folks, Sprawl said. We asked several people to run for the seat, but several said they didn't want it. Catch up all of the drama. If you want to know what kind of SOB you are, just run for city council. Somebody will tell you, Sprawl said. As for the rumors about Moreno, Sprawl said he hopes they aren't true. I'd like to believe it's just a dirty rumor around the streets. I like Michael Moreno. I like his style. I like his candidness and his leadership skills, Sprawl said. I like to think it's going to happen, but it may. ARPA. White said she even wonders if the $3 million can even be used for the firefighter raises. It's her understanding that ARPA funds are intended to reimburse city for losses due to COVID-19, for example, for emergency supplies. As far as I know, it could refund you or replenish what you spend over a time for COVID relief, but not pay for raises, White said. Underpaid employees. Back in July, the Odessa City Council voted unanimously to hire an outside firm to look at the city employees' pay in comparison with other communities. Over OFR employees attended several meetings pleading for raises. More than 70 firefighters have left the department over the last 2 years, many of them citing pay as the reason. The council agreed Evergreen Solutions should study firefighter dispatch and police officers' pay first and then look at the salaries of general government employees. An Evergreen representative recently told the city council that bringing all employees up to the same level as their peers in other cities would cost the city a minimum of $7.5 million to $9.5 million a year. However, he cautioned that council that amount doesn't include any increase in the ancillary costs associated with benefits, nor would it address compensation. Evergreen's Michael Mirashani told the council Odessa's public safety employees are paid at least 15% below those in its peer cities. But those numbers do not include the hands-on pay firefighters are given for certain certifications they acquire as part of their jobs. Preliminary figures also show general government employees are being paid as much as 20% below their peers. But on average, the city is paying its general government employees 4 to 7% below their peers, Mirashani said. While all the council members agree firefighters need to receive raises, half of the council have expressed their concern that focusing just on the firefighters' pay is doing a major disservice to other first responders and general government employees. Fairness in question. Hearing Hovind told Tippin the $3 million would go to firefighters' pay alone is distressing, Sprawls, White and Thompson said. The entire council voted to wait to discuss raises until the compensation study is complete, and it isn't. How do you tell your public works folks, you guys are important, but not as important as these other guys, White said. The people who work in the city's water treatment plant or repair city water lines are critical personnel, and they shouldn't be bypassed, White said. The same is true of people in other city departments. There are some that have not considered our parks to be important. I think the comment was, well, they're nice, but you've just got to look at everything. There's a lot of things that make a city desirable, White said. If the new council only gives firefighters raises, there's going to be a lot of pushback. My garbage guy is a real important guy to me. I really don't want him to quit coming by. The future. Sprawls, Thompson, and White are also concerned about how the city is going to sustain whatever raises are approved by the new council. $3 million will make a difference this year, but it's not going to make a difference for the years to come. The city still has to figure out where they're going to cut and what else they're going to be able to do to maintain those raises from now on. Sprawls agreed the $3 million will help for a year, but said ultimately the city is going to have to rely on increased property taxes to cover the cost of raises. Sales tax revenues can't be relied upon. The city of Odessa can't run on a deficit, Sprawls said. You got the taxes, spend Democrats and the tax cuts, and spend Republicans. It's disgusting to me, Sprawls said. Here's this guy tout themselves as being such good conservatives, and that's what West Texas wants, is a good conservative council. And they're out there trying to spend money like a drunk, without a bond election, without approval from the council. Programs Aim to Help Needy Odessans by Kim Smith. Year after year, Gary Snedeker suffered through Odessa's brutal summers and winters. His window AC unit couldn't help keep up with the heat and humidity most months, and the cold air just whipped through his drafty windows the other months. As if that wasn't enough, his 50s-era home on North Tom Green Avenue didn't have adequate water pressure. The floors were cracked and unlevel, the electricity was unreliable, and the roof was in terrible shape. His cousin, Bobby Donaldson, suggested they reach out to the city of Odessa to see if the Community Development Department could lend a hand. Bill Talley inspected it and decided it was a classic case of good news, bad news. The bad news was there was no way to save the home. The good news was Snedeker qualified for a program that would allow the city of Odessa to raise it and build an entirely new one for him on the same property. Just over a little over a year ago, Snedeker was handed the keys to his brand-new 1,100-square-foot, two-bedroom, one-bath. I cried when I walked in and I'd seen it, Snedeker 66 said. His favorite feature? The kitchen, the dining room, the bedrooms, and the bathrooms. It's a lot better than my old bathroom, Snedeker said. The bathroom was so small in the old house. I like my walk-in shower. I love that. Marita Sandoval, Director of Community Development and Code Enforcement for the City of Odessa, said every year the city receives roughly $500,000 from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to spend over four different city programs. In addition to the reconstruction program, Snedeker was a beneficiary of the city has minor repair, emergency repair, and rehabilitation programs for those city residents who qualify. An individual or family who earns 80% or less of the area's median income might be able to get immediate help getting their furnace fixed or severely leaking roof fixed, for instance. Sandoval said the resident recently received help after going 2 years without water or electricity. She was carrying in water for sponge baths, drinking and flushing her toilet. I don't think some people have any idea how some of our citizens live. I don't think they have a clue, Sandoval said. People in the same income level could only qualify for help getting less urgent repairs done. For example, they could get energy-efficient windows or insulation. Snedeker, because he's owned his home outright and fell into the right income range, was eligible to have his home rehabilitated or reconstructed. Last year was a bit of a slow year with only 7 families benefiting from the program. But 5 homes are being worked on right now, Sandoval said. Another 6 are pending. On Tuesday, Sandoval will ask the Odessa City Council to transfer $243,333 in federal funding from an unused infill housing construction program to her rehab reconstruction budget. Last week, Sandoval told the council she's seen a major influx of people seeking help repairs and transfer will help accommodate them. That will free up some of our community development block grant money so we can do minor repairs, Sandoval told the council. Sandoval explained once the construction is done, the city requires the homeowners to purchase homeowners insurance. She also noted the city takes about a 15-year lien on the property, but what the homeowners pay debts on their income level. Most of them are 100% forgiven over 15 years, Sandoval said. We have payback levels that are 0, 25, 50, 75, and 100% of our interest rates. They're 1, 2, and 3%, but very few have to pay anything back. Tally designs all of the new homes and oversees the contractor to make sure the city is meeting all the required codes for the construction, Sandoval said. Snedka and others like him are given options when it comes to bricks, paint, floor stain, roofing colors, she said. During the tour of Snedgar's recently, Tally pointed out the city was required by FEMA to lift the home out of the floodplain. He also showed off Snedgar's custom-built cabinets, numerous storage places, and laundry room. The kitchen counters are also granite because they'll last longer, and all the homes are built with 36-inch doorways and other handicap features, Tally said. The homes also have energy-efficient features as well, from the lights to the appliances to the insulation. I designed these homes with 2x6 walls instead of 2x4s, so we get more insulation in the walls. We get more insulation in the rafters because we do foam envelope. We spray foam everything on the exterior and in the roof so it's completely encapsulated. The whole home is foam. That keeps the heating and cooling bills to a minimum. Snedgar is now well set for the future, Tally said. He's pretty much in a home that he can stay in more comfortably for the rest of his life. It's virtually maintenance-free, Tally said. The whole exterior is brick and vinyl and metal. The exterior is very comfortable because of the way it's constructed. Although construction jobs can be challenging, like those in floodplains, Tally loves his job. The good thing about the program is that it helps people that really live in conditions that they shouldn't be living in. Most of the people that we deal with are elderly people. They get into a system where they can't fix the home they live in, Tally said. Death notices. Odessa. Lindell Brady, 69, of Odessa, died Sunday, November 13th, in Odessa, Texas. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Matrina's Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas. Odessa. Laverne Williams, 90, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, November 16, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 22nd, at Rosa Sharon Baptist Church, Odessa, Texas. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery to Rose Hill Section. Pastor Robert Templeton and Windsor L. Archie are officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, November 21st. National Art Honor Society forms. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa art teacher Jesus Valeriano has many irons in the fire, and one of them is the recently started National Art Honor Society. There are 16 members, and Valeriano says it is more exclusive than the National Honor Society, which has about 70 students. Nisa Bella Carres, an 18-year-old senior, is president of the National Art Honor Society. She said you have to, among other things, have good grades and contribute to the free Little Art Gallery. Students place things like earrings, stickers, bookmarks, and small sketchbooks for people to take. They have to restock frequently. Valeriano said, having the free little art gallery makes art accessible and approachable to the community. He added that they are beginning a lot of notice on social media and contributors have started to crop up. He said it is the first one in Odessa and the sixth free little art gallery in the state. Quote, it's a worldwide movement, Valeriano said. This is the first year for the society. It is open to juniors and seniors for this year. Next year, they are hoping to open it up to other grades. The group tries to meet twice weekly. Quote, I've always had a love for art. Even for someone like me who doesn't want to go into an artistic field, I want to use it somehow in my career. I've always had a love for what it can bring to the community, Carey said. She added that she hopes the National Art Honor Society will continue. Quote, like I said, I'm a senior, so obviously I won't be here the following year. But the Free Little Art Gallery and the National Art Honor Society is something that even for people who aren't artistic, they'll have something to look at. We want to spread this art around to make people feel good, Curry said. Destiny Amaya, a 17-year-old senior, thinks it's great to be part of the National Art Honor Society. Amaya said they've always gotten together to do things and try different mediums like clay. Quote, "That was really fun because a lot of us stick to one type of medium, so he gives us the opportunity to explore different things that we can use for a VASE competition. For example, we spend time trying to work on things for that," Amaya said. Veronica Flores, a 17-year-old senior, has been taking art classes since middle school and was a state winner at VASE, Visual Arts Scholastic Event, in 2020. Chloe Acosta, a 17-year-old senior, said she really enjoys being part of the National Art Honor Society because it allows her to showcase her art. She uses watercolor and acrylics. Quote, "I like to paint. I try to paint realistic things and just better my skills. I try to challenge myself," Acosta said. Nysa Dunn, a 17-year-old junior, is the incoming vice president for next year. Quote, "Last year we had art club. This is another thing that was similar, so I wanted to do it," Dunn said. She enjoys being able to create crafts and paint. Valeriano says he thinks the society validates the work of his students because sometimes art isn't taken seriously or people just see it as a hobby. Quote, "But having a national society, you need certain talent and you need to meet certain requirements to be part of it. It really is amazing," Valeriano said. He added that as members of the National Art Honor Society, students have access to scholarships. Quote, "It looks amazing on any college application," Valeriano said. This year, the National Art Educators Conference will be in Texas, which for a lot of art educators is a dream. Because the national meetings are always so far away, Valeriano said they attend the state conferences. Quote, "But this year, the National Art Educators Association Conference is in San Antonio, so one of the things the National Art Educators Association does is being in charge of the Honor Society, so it all came together," Valeriano said.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 19th, from Your Good Health. Radio frequency ablation lessens back pain. Dear Dr. Roach, I suffered a lower back injury in 2001 with crushed and bulging discs in the L2, L3, L4, and L5 vertebrae. After over a year of physical therapy and drugs, my pain doctor tried an epidural injection, which did not work, and then suggested I try something new at the time called radio frequency ablation, also called a lumbar facet rhizotomy. It's done as an outpatient surgery and may have to be repeated. I've done so many that I opt for no anesthesia. It works great. I even get up and drive myself home. I've learned to limit my activities so as not to cause more damage due to my disabled pain receptors. I have been pain and drug-free for almost 20 years. The treatment usually lasts 9 to 14 months, and when I feel the nerve starting to fire again and causing me pain, I just schedule the procedure and have them ablated again. Whenever I see somebody walking funny with back pain, I mention this procedure to them. Several of them have come back and thanked me for saying something. Doctors don't seem to promote this procedure, and I don't understand why. It's clearly another option besides surgery and addictive medication. It's been a win-win for me, as opposed to surgery. Please help promote this wonderful yet unknown procedure. I'm still living an active, normal life at 64, 20 years after I was told I may end up in a wheelchair. Signed, J.S. Answer. Radio frequency ablation of the nerves in the back has been used since the 1970s in people with intractable back pain. The procedure uses an electrode that heats the nerves in the facet joints of the back, stopping pain conduction. This is done when the treating physician is sure that the pain is coming from these particular nerves, called the lumbar medial branch nerves. This procedure is not appropriate for all types of back pain. Typically, the physician will perform a block using an injection, and if this is successful but short-lived, as is often the case, a radiofrequency ablation is considered.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.